Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on the Ogilvy Day Stage. We're excited to welcome our next speaker, Jim Hopkinson, who is going to be speaking about his book, Salary Tutor, Become a Salary Negotiation Rockstar. It's a topic that I think is relevant to just about everyone. Jim hosts a blog and podcast called The Hopkinson Report and runs a conference called Reboot Workshop that helps people transition from full-time jobs to independent careers. And he's going to talk about salary negotiation, obviously, which is key, and it's likely something that no one's ever taught you. He has based the book on his real-world experience at Wired, ESPN, and a tech startup, and this presentation will help you get paid what you deserve. Please welcome Jim.
Hey, everyone. Good afternoon. Might as well jump right to it, get in there as a rock star. Some people were born salary negotiation rock stars. They were thrust center stage, put under the spotlight, and they just simply know how to negotiate. However, for the majority of people, negotiation is terrifying. You haven't been taught how to do it, and so it can be very stressful. But fortunately, while I was writing Salary Tutor, I found that it was a skill that could be taught. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is I'm going to show you a quick video, a one-minute video of what happens when you're not ready to negotiate. I'm going to show you my career path and how that had some twists and turns. And then what I'm going to do is give you a couple of tips so that you can defeat the evil HR lady. So let's get going. So let me introduce you to Allison.
Today, Allison is interviewing for her dream job. She's been looking for an opportunity like this for almost a year and has been preparing for weeks. She's prepared the perfect resume, practiced the basic interview questions.
My weaknesses, caring too much, working too hard, and cheesecake.
She's even prepared the perfect handshake.
It's great to meet you.
Unfortunately, there was one part of the interview that she didn't prepare for.
Well, it sounds like you're exactly the type of candidate we're looking for. What were you thinking in terms of salary?
Uh-oh. There's a couple ways this could play out.
That is an interesting question. 50,000? 55,000? No, don't tell me. 60,000. 62. 3. 4. 75? Hang on one second. I'm going to find out. What do you make? Whatever you want to pay me is just fine.
How many of you out there have been in a situation like that? Okay, a bunch of you. So when I set about writing the book, it turned out I only came out with two simple goals. The first one is to be able to say I was prepared. And so in Allison's case, she clearly wasn't prepared. And the second one is to say I did everything I could. And what that means to me is avoiding one word, and that word is regret. You don't want to come back and be like, I wish I had said this, or I wonder if they would have paid me $5,000 more. Why didn't I counteroffer? So those are the two goals we have going into this. And so rather than reading directly from chapter 4 of my book, I'm going to paraphrase and tell you a couple of stories. And what I found very helpful, I was on a panel once, and people think that, like, oh, why would you do that? It's simple. The older you get, the more money you make. And that's not always true. When I graphed my salary out, it ended up looking like this. I've been laid off 3 times. I had ups and downs and took a pay cut, and this is how it went. So let me set the scene back in the year 1991. And I knew 3 things. Number one, unlike this huge festival that we have right here today, geeks weren't as cool back then. Number two, big glasses and mullets were in. And number three, the starting salary for a computer information systems major was $41,423. And the reason I knew that is because it said it in the chart. I went to career services like a month before I graduated, and they had like accounting and actuarial and communications. And, oh, computer information systems, 41,423. I'm like, awesome, I'm going to make 40 grand in a month or two. You know, went back to school. Then I walked across the stage in graduation, smack into a recession. There were no jobs back then. The unemployment rate was 8.2%. And to put that into perspective, it would be 18 years before it hit that high mark with the recent recession. And so when people come to me like, "Wah, Jim, I can't get a raise, it's a recession," I'm like, I don't want to hear it. I've already been there. You just have to work harder. You can figure it out. So my starting salary wasn't $41,000. It was zero. So I decided to do an internship. So I did the internship. I learned some skills. I learned how to use a Mac for the first time. But of course, the salary was zero. Actually, that's not true. because as I was driving to and from my parents' house in the suburbs into Cambridge every day in my trusty 1975 Dodge Dart, look how cool that guy is, right? The transmission blew. So now my salary was minus $1,000 because I had to repair my car. So I walked into, I'm like, I need to get some kind of money. So I walked into local Staples, yes, the Office Superstore, and I dropped off my resume. I came home, and within 5 minutes, the phone rang. And they're like, Jim, you just dropped off a resume. We want to offer you the job. I was like, ooh, that was easy. And the reason for that was that how often did they get a resume of like an honors computer student wanting to work in their, you know, computer aisle? So the key, though, it was a fateful move because on those computers was something called Spinnaker software. So I was selling that along with the computers. And a few weeks later, I was reading the want ads in the newspaper, and I saw this. You guys all know what want ads are in newspapers? Okay. So there's this thing called the newspaper, and there was an ad for technical support reps wanted for Spinnaker software. So I was like, awesome. So I went in, I nailed the interview. I'm like, I already sell your software. And they're like, great, you're a perfect match. We're gonna offer you the job. We're going to set you up with HR and offer you the job. And so this is the antagonist in the book who I call the evil HR lady. Although that's the stock photo that I use. In reality, she actually looked a little bit more like this. So I think that's evil grandma when you Google it or something. So she says, Jim, we heard your interview went well. We'd like to offer you a position. It pays $20,000. And I was like, oh, that's not 41,423. But I said, you know, based on my experience, I'm selling your software. I'm a computer major. I was hoping there's something in the mid-20s. And she looked at me and she said, the job pays $20,000. Do you want it or not? And I'm like, okay. And so the takeaway from that isn't, you might say, oh, that was a really bad negotiation, but that's not true, because if you look at my two goals, was I prepared? Yes, I knew the conversation was coming. I took steps to be prepared for it. And did I do everything I could? Yes, I did. I counteroffered. I tried to get more money. I stated what I wanted. And she told me that it's $20,000 for everyone. So I had no regrets, and I knew that I was getting at least paid the same as everyone else in the entire department. So I ended up taking the job. And that was my first negotiation. So I end up going through the rest of my jobs in the book. I worked at a startup, and I know when you say, you know, working at a startup around here, you guys are like, oh, cool, startup, does it have a rock band room? Does it have a napping station where you can hang out with aquariums? Does it have a slide that goes from one floor to the other? No. This was 1994. The startup looked a little bit like this guy's office. So I talked about the negotiation and the highs and lows around that. Then I talked about my dream job at ESPN, working in sports, the ups and downs and negotiations there. And then finally, my dream job in technology, working for Wired. And the important thing, I see some confused looks out there. I'm the one on the right, by the way, just so you know. So what I end up doing is taking people through that. And now what I'm going to do for you is teach you how you can defeat the evil HR lady. Now, I want to start out by saying, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. No one ever teaches you how to negotiate salary, right? Did your parents sit you down and say, here's what you're going to do? And your friends don't really talk about it. Kind of money is a taboo subject among friends. And then your employer is definitely not going to tell you about it. And so I said, is it just me that people are doing this? So I went over to Google and I searched on interviews, I searched on salary, and I searched on resumes, and that's the results I got. I'm like, that's interesting. So I went over to Amazon. Same results. Lots of information on interviewing and resumes, not a lot on salary negotiation. And what I also found in my research is that it's even worse for women. This is Sheryl Sandberg, who is COO of Facebook, and she did a TED Talk on women in the workplace and said, women systematically underestimate their own abilities. She quoted a study, 57% of men negotiate a higher salary for their first job, while only 7% of women do the same. And we're going to see an example of this firsthand in my closing case study. So you guys ready? Let's do this. There's a lot of steps that you can go through and variations you can tailor to your situation. I'm only going to go through a couple, but fortunately, what I did in the last page of Salary Tutor is have a handy-dandy flowchart to take you through it, so last second prepping. So first step anyone's going to tell you is do your homework. You're not always going to know what the salary range is, so you need to know everything you can about what the pay is in the industry, about what your skills are worth, et cetera. So start doing your homework. And there's plenty of places online to do that, such as Glassdoor.com or Payscale.com. And what I'm going to suggest is to bring this document into your interview with you for your closing arguments. Now, when you go to print something on the web, say you get this data, you can go to file and print. But the problem is you get all these like banner ads and white space. It doesn't look too professional. So you could go to the next level and take screenshots, get into Photoshop, and kind of arrange it so it looks like a nicer document. But what I did for the book is I told my designer, what would you do if you had freedom to make anything like this? And so she put together this document. So a very professional-looking document that you can bring into your kind of closing arguments and show what the data is. And because we're all new media rock stars, I'm going to turn it up one more level, turn it up to 11, and you could bring that document in on an iPad. So if you're going for a technical job, what better way to show that you walk the walk and talk the talk? So one of the magic rules to remember is that you should do everything in your power to get them to name the number first. So I call this the right back at you method. So it's almost like getting competitive. Think about it as a tennis match. They're throwing you a question, you're throwing it right back at you, right at them. And so the key thing for that is the phrase, what type of range did you have budgeted for the position? So you guys should all say that in your head to yourself. What kind of range did you have budgeted for the position? So let's practice. They say something like, so what are you currently making at your job? Great answer is, oh, I'm sorry, my current employment contract doesn't allow me to reveal my salary. What type of range did you have budgeted for the position? Or they could ask it looking forward and say something like, so what kind of salary were you looking for? And you're going to tailor this to your situation. I go through a whole bunch of scenarios, but let's take the economy scenario. So if it was me, I could say something like, well, you know what, to be honest, the last time I interviewed was back in 2007. As we all know, everything's changed since then. Some companies, you know, didn't do so well and had layoffs and folded. Some thrived and ended up rewarding their people. So it really seemed to vary when I was doing my research. What kind of range did you have in mind? Another way to do it is if you're changing jobs. So you could say, well, as you know, we went through my skills as a marketing assistant. I think there's some really great skills I can bring to this next job. But as I was doing my homework, trying to find out the salary range for someone that's changing over from being a marketing assistant to a rodeo clown, there wasn't a lot of data that supported that. And so, what type of range did you have budgeted for the position? So if this works, they're going to come back to you with a number. They're going to say something like, well, we were thinking something in the $65,000 to $75,000 range. If that's the case, now you're going to break out the FBI hostage negotiation techniques. So I found a really cool document that talks about seven different skills that hostage negotiators use when they're trying to, you know, get back the hostage. And I'm going to cover three of them today. Those three things are minimal encouragements, paraphrasing and mirroring, and effective pauses. So let me take you through the scenario. You get them to say the number. They say, oh, we were thinking something in the $65,000 to $75,000 range. And you would say, I see. So the top of your range is $75,000. See how awkward this pause is? Before you're like, this guy's talking, he's energetic, and all of a sudden, silence. And silence is very powerful. Selena Rezvani is another career-oriented author. She's saying using silence is one of the greatest negotiation strategies at your disposal. And what's going to happen is a couple of scenarios will play out from that by using the silence. If they're nervous, they might be looking to fill that space and might say, we might be able to get you 80 or maybe 85. So that's a good thing, right? Another scenario is they could say, well, were you looking for more, or do you have a problem with that, or were you thinking another number? And then the third way could be that they would say, I'm really sorry, you know, our budget's the max this year, $75,000 is the max that we can go. And that's also not a bad thing either, because like my first scenario, you know that you reached their max. So I would say, despite any of those three different answers, you got one more shot at it, now is the time to bring out that salary negotiation document. And the reason I like this is, number one, you're working from objective data. You're not just, you know, throwing numbers out of the air. Two, you're also saying, when you said earlier, oh, I've done my research, you're proving that you did your research. Also, it makes it less us versus them or me against you, and it's almost like two people reading a map. Hey, can you mind if we look at the data? And then you can kind of map that out, and then the salary will evolve from there. So I'm going to conclude today with a little story I like to call A Tale of Two Interns. The first intern is Katie. Katie was amazing, super smart, and I was in the Wired sales meeting one day, and they're like, oh, last point of business, we have some sales associate jobs open if you know anyone. I was like, oh, Katie would be perfect for this. So I talked to the manager, I get a phone call, and she's like, oh my God, I just talked to Katie. She's amazing, right? She's smart, she's friendly. Is there any reason you wouldn't, you know, hire her? I'm like, except that you're stealing my best intern. No, you should definitely hire her. 5 seconds later, bring, her phone rings right next. I guess phones don't bring anymore, but she picks up the phone, and I'm not a 23-year-old girl, but I'm going to try to imitate one right now. This is how I heard the conversation. It was something like this. It was like, hey, hi, yeah, cool, great, awesome, thanks, bye, boom. And I was like, she's like, Jim, I got the job. I was like, awesome, all right, high five. So what's the deal? She's like, oh, well, I'll be with you for another 2 weeks. I'm like, okay, I'm reporting to Jenny. Great, great. And, you know, it sounds good. And I was like, so Katie, did she talk about salary on there at all? She's like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, did you negotiate? And she goes, no, I just got so excited I didn't know what to say. I was like, Katie, you have my manuscript. I was like, for anyone else in this company, oh, I didn't know what to say, but your boss wrote a book that details every single thing that you're supposed to say. And she's like, I just got so excited. And that's what happens when you're not prepared. So a week later, yes, I lost both of my best interns in the same week, Kenny comes running up, and he's like, boss, remember that job? I got that offer, but I know you're the salary guy, so I didn't say anything yet. I'm like, all right, what's the deal? He's like, okay. They offered me, I think it was, you know, $38,000. I'm like, all right, here's what you're going to do. Call him back. Just very casual. Just kind of tick off the list of things. Like, hey, yeah, I'm really excited. I'm going to accept the job. So you said I'd start on the 14th, and I'd be reporting to Mark, and my position would be, you know, marketing coordinator. And you had said the salary was $38,000. I'm just wondering where I'm coming from wired as an intern and not right out of school, if there might be a little flexibility in that number. He's like, got it, boss. He goes running off. And then a few minutes later, I get on a conference call, and he comes up, and he doesn't look so good. I'm like, Kenny, what's the matter? He's like, you know, I called him back, and three things. He's like, remember I told you that VP that I know works there? I called him, and he said, don't negotiate. I was like, well, all right, that's his opinion. You'll be okay. Then I talked to the HR person, and they said no one had ever negotiated before. And I was like, all right, that's all right. And he's like, also, they said they were going to pay me $35,000. So they had already built in an extra $3,000 in their initial offer. Like, all right. And he's like, and then they said, because no one had ever negotiated, they're going to have to go back to finance. They're going to have to go back to my hiring manager. He's like, I think I just lost the job. I'm like, it'll be fine. Just go through the conversation. How did it go? And he looks at me and he says, well, I told them that I was living at home in my parents' basement in Long Island, that I needed to move into the city, and that I wanted $39,000. I'm like, that's not what I told you at all. And so he's like, oh, man, I blew it. So I'm still on this call. And next thing you know, Katie and Kenny come bounding up. I can't tell if they're ready to stab me or they're excited. Like, boss. And all of a sudden I hear, Jim, what do you think? I'm like, hold on. And I think the budget should be fine. And they're trying to get my attention. And all of a sudden they reach down and just grab a piece of paper and they write something down. And they hold it up. And it says, 40,000. We win. So what that proves is, not only did the company outbid themselves, not only did he not lose the job, but he became the highest paid entry-level person in the history of that company just by negotiating. So to sum things up, our friends at Van Halen are going on their 2012 tour. Now, certainly, Mr. Lee Roth probably has tens of millions of dollars to spend, so he must be doing it for something else. And that's how I always leave my speeches and my classes that I teach, is to say, yes, money can be important, but it's not the be-all, end-all. At the end of the day, the most important thing is to be able to say, look at the big picture. Do you have a great boss? Do you have an easier commute? Do you have work-life balance? So if you can say that, and in the end, you have your dream job, then you definitely are a rock star. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. I don't think so. I think it's the same kind of steps that you're going to go through. The question was, what if there is no evil HR lady and it's your future boss? I think the important thing to know is that this is kind of a one-shot chance, like this window. You might be searching for months to find that perfect job. You're interviewing, you're networking, resumes, LinkedIn, all this work. And then you get the job and you might be at your job for 3 years. You have this tiny window. So the silence trick, it's really hard. Try practicing. Don't even just practice in interviews. Practice it at like the store and with friends. It really works. And I spent 8 straight hours practicing for that 30-second conversation. And why not? Because what could be more important than, you know, nailing that salary conversation? So I think you kind of prepare the same way. Okay, so the question is, what if you're the 23-year-old girl that didn't negotiate and now you want to negotiate for a raise? Great question. How to get a raise has a couple of different steps that I cover as well. And what I recommend doing is you start almost on the first day of your job. So I call it in the book, I made up a fancy word, your accomplishments manifesto. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to update your resume every single week, but what you should do is just keep a quick notepad or, you know, text file, and every time you have an accomplishment, hey, we just hit our highest webpage views, or hey, the marketing plan came in under budget, keep these notes, and then in 6 months when you're going for that raise, you can say, hey, here are all the things that I did, and you're going in there with documentation and homework to prove your value. And the other thing to do with that is to monetize it, not say, hey, page views are up, 20%. Say, page views went up by 1 million page views. We have 2 ads per page. We charge $20 per ad. Therefore, the calculated value that I made by adding 1 million page views through my marketing comes out to X. The question is, what if you're in a workplace where there's salary scales? Very good question. And what I say in the book is, do these techniques work for everyone in every case? There's going to be ones that are easier. The best one is kind of the scenario I show where you're going to a new job, where you're going in fresh and you can really negotiate. Getting a raise at your current job is a little bit trickier. And then in scenarios where, like as a teacher or a government employee where it's kind of leveled, does make it trickier. But a lot of the same things apply. Showing your worth. And a lot of times what you need to do is prove that you're at the next level. So if you're at a level 37 and like, hey, we think you should be a level 37, find out what the skills are for level 38. And if you can prove that you have the experience to be at another level, you can aim for the salary at that level. Way in the back. You, yep. If they give you a number and you think they're bluffing, it helps to know what your value is. When you go into this, even though you're going to try to get their maximum value, you still have to kind of have that counter in your head and knowing, here's what I make now, here's the minimum I'm going to take, here's the range I think I'm going to get, and here's what I'm going to want if I do a really good job negotiating. I do recommend not necessarily accepting right on the spot. So a good conversation for that is, we were thinking, 65 to 75. You could say, all right, well, sounds good. We talked about a lot today, because you might then go on to like benefits and title and vacation and say, wow, we really talked a lot today about all this stuff. I've taken some notes, but what I'd like to do is to have, 24 hours to think it over, talk to my wife or whatever, and be able to say, and just to make sure that I have all the facts down, and you can take it on yourself and say, just to make sure I didn't miss anything, and then you can kind of regroup, step away from that pressure situation, and then maybe you can come back at them with more data and say, when I really thought about it, I really feel because I can bring X and Y that I was hoping for something in this range. So the question is, what if you're negotiating with multiple companies at the same time? First of all, that's a great scenario to be in, right? That you have a fallback and you don't have to take this job. And I think it varies. You're under no obligation to tell what other offer you got from the other job. So they're like, well, what are they paying you? And I think the important thing is to just say they need to know what they're paying for the job. That's why we don't like the question, well, what are you making at your current job? Well, I'm working at Staples. I have a computer maid. Like, that has nothing to do with it. This company should know we have a goal to make, and we want to hire someone to reach that goal. Therefore, we have to come up with a budget of how much we can pay that new person. So it's almost using that back at you and saying, I do have another offer pending, I'd really like to focus on this job here. Is that the max that you would get? And answer it that way. Yeah, the question is, what if they right off the bat, they say, hey, so what are you making at your current job? And in the beginning, you want to defer that conversation until they know that you want it for the job. And so it has to come, all of this stuff, I can tell you lines to say, but it has to come honestly. So if you say, you know what, I really need to know more about the position before I can give you that number, it's true, right? Like, what if you go in this interview and you give a low number, and then you go and you talk to everyone, and it's like, oh my God, this job is travel, and I have to work 60 hours a week. I would need much more money. Or what if it's the reverse, and you give a really high number, and then you go on the interview, and you're like, oh my God, this is my dream job. They're working on this great, great thing. I would have taken something lower. So you really do have to know more about the job. And the thing I'll also say is, some people will say, well, what if they make you fill out an online form and you have to put in a number? And I say, don't put yourself in that position in the first place. If you are... the upwards of 80% of jobs are through networking. So why go on Monster or, you know, another job site and just be fighting with thousands of people when you can target the jobs that you want and then go find the network and a way to get to them, and then you don't have to go through HR? I would try to, would you answer it? He said, I would say keep deflecting. If you have to, what I say is to talk about the crazy range. And the example I give is, like, what if it's, how much does an apartment cost in New York City? I don't know. You can get a small studio in the Village for $500,000, and I've seen penthouses on Park Avenue for $10 million or more. So it's almost asking, like, so what are you looking to make? Well, you know, I've done a lot of research about this position, and what I found is that it really varied. I've seen some people, you know, offering $50,000, and I've seen some offering $100,000 or more. You know, what kind of range did you have in mind? And what that's doing is you're not saying, well, the lowest I'll take is $50,000. You're saying, I've seen a lot of variance out there. What do you think? How are we doing on time? All right. We are wrapping it up, folks. Thank you so much for coming. I'm going to be doing a book signing after this at 1 o'clock. So thank you very much.